Hello and welcome to this latest edition of the Seahawks UK podcast. I'm your host, as always, Alan Ramich. With me, I've got writer for The Athletic and host of the Seahawks Man to Man podcast, Michael Sean Dugar. Mike, welcome to the show, sir. How are you doing?
I am doing good. Thank you for having me on. Sorry, I'm getting something set up on here.
No problem. We were going to touch on the Patriots game first and, you know, go into recap for that. But obviously news broke today that Damon Harrison is coming in for a visit to Seattle next week. So I wanted to get your 2 cents on that first before we touch on the Patriots game. What do you think of that news? I don't think the run defense has been the issue primarily. It's the pass defense. And, you know, while Damon Harrison's a great vet and an awesome follow on Twitter, it's nice that they're adding to the D-line, but I think it's the wrong type of D-line help. I don't know how you feel about it. But
I don't think it's wrong. I mean, you know, I think help is help. They could use a lot of help on defense. It really doesn't matter what position, to be honest. And what I talking to the passing game coordinator, Andre Curtis, yesterday, he talked about the passing yardage they've allowed, which is a lot. I think it's 847 in two games, which is a lot. One of the things he mentioned was like the rush and the coverage has to work in concert, which they do. Not to say that Snacks is going to like turn into Clowney as soon as he signs, but that, it does speak to the fact that like it isn't just the back end, it isn't just the front end. They work together. They're called a defensive unit for a reason. Mm-hmm. Together, and they've all been bad. So any help you can get is fine. I don't know if it'll make a big difference, but what it may be able to do, if nothing else, the big positive is it's going to sound a little weird at first. Fewer snaps for some of the guys. Like some of these guys are playing a lot of snaps. Like I think Jay Reed's playing a lot more snaps than he usually does. I think guys like Puna are playing a lot more snaps. I have to check their numbers, but I'm pretty sure those guys are playing more snaps than they usually would. So giving those big dudes a breather is important. Though I have noted, not noted, but D-line guys will tell you the playing the snaps is not the hard part some of the time. It's running from the field to the sideline. Mm-hmm. Like I think that's what, probably like 20, that's like 50 yards round trip, something like that. You know, that if you're 340 pounds, that's probably a lot. So the fewer times,
especially for a guy like Snacks.
Yeah, Snacks, Puna, Brian Monet, Jay Reed, they're small guys, right? So you're going from midfield there and back in here. It's like, yes, I think that's like 50 yards round trip. So that's a lot. So the fewer times they do that is probably a net positive.
I don't disagree with you. And like I said, you know, it's a guy that the Seahawks seem to have been monitoring for a while now. So it's not like a rush decision based on like 2 weeks a game. Also, it'll just be awesome to have a guy like Snacks on the team. Just another good dude, and I'm sure you can attest to it. Like, it's nice to have good people on the team when you talk to them and stuff. You know, it's easier to, for your job as well, isn't it? Like, realistically.
Yeah, for sure. I think in terms of a guy they've been monitoring for a while, they have every team has like personnel directors who it's their job just to keep a list of players that you may need, whether your team sucks, whether your team has an injury. That's how they can have guys because it's so quick, because they have a big board, or it's probably like a PDF, or it's probably actually a spreadsheet in Excel that just like, all right, cool, we need this. Let's call these guys on the list. Like I think last year when they lost all those running backs, they already had a list of Alex Collins, Marshawn. There was another one, C.J. Anderson. So they just had the names just queued up. So I think it's never just like random. It's always a contingency plan in place with every team, at least the good teams, at least. I've never met Snacks. He's got a great name. I grew up with a dude named Snacks as well. I always like the name. It's never a small guy named Snacks, which is great. So, yeah, I mean, I think he'll sign probably. They could use him. But even if he doesn't, I think – the defense just needs to – they got the pieces, I think, to be better. They just need to do it.
And I think, especially within the NFL, there seems to be an underlying, like, a correlation, I'd say, between, like, I think a lot of the defenses have been subpar so far. I don't think it's just the Seahawks. We've seen it. We're going to see it upcoming with the Cowboys as well. I think, especially with defense, I think the offensive unit for the Seahawks, because essentially it's the same guys, barring like the likes of Damian Lewis and Brandon Shell coming in. It's a lot of the same guys who have been there for a while, so it's easier to have continuity. Like we talked about, we touched on it before we started recording a little bit. There's Bobby, there's KJ, obviously there's Jerron Reed, Puna Ford, Shaquille Griffin, but there's also like the likes of Quinton Dunbar. It's Quandre Diggs' first season as well. So I think the question I want to ask you is, do you think it will still take a little bit more time for this defense to gel together and get to a point where, even if they're just league average with the way that Russell Wilson's been playing, I just want your views on that.
There's only so much benefit of the doubt I'm willing to give the guys. Two games is a small sample size, but the numbers have been really bad. I mean, chemistry aside, like you look at their numbers compared to the league. I was just looking it up, or I had someone help me look it up. They've given up like 23 explosive pass plays through two games. That's for them. That's 16 yards or more on a pass play. They've given up 23 of those. I believe the league as a whole, the average is like 10. So it's not, it's like continuity aside, like these guys didn't just meet yesterday. That's, you know, everyone else's teams are struggling with the same issue and ain't giving up the yardage. And even if you account for some of their garbage time yards, quote unquote, when they're leading by a lot, they're still giving up. Let's see. I got that in front of me too. They're giving up. I think they've given up 12 explosive pass plays when leading by 10 or more points, which would be like garbage time. I think the next closest is like two. Now, some teams may not have been leading for as long, but I mean, teams have been, there's other people blowing teams out. The Packers are blowing teams out. The Ravens are blowing teams out. The Chiefs are holding leads, and they're not giving up a ton of yards, and they're prevent defense either. So I can't necessarily chalk it up to like a lack of chemistry or whatever. I'm sure that's some of it. I'm sure it is. But when you look at how those numbers compare to the rest of the league, it's like, okay, you guys are just playing poorly. And you know, that's like the that's the largest, the most significant piece of it.
Well, that's I think that's a fair assumption to make. I was playing devil's advocate there more than anything. just to touch, go back to the Patriots game. Just give me some takeaways from that game. What do you think? You know, Seahawks aside, I know you did that the podcast on Man to Man about Cam Newton and with the gentleman from the Ringer. I thought it was an awesome episode. I think Cam looked fantastic, and Russell was even better. So I don't know how you feel, but it was honestly a joy to watch both of those guys play at such a high level.
Yeah, I think talk about benefit of the doubt. The idea that Cam was going to be bad with whoever he signed with was absolutely ludicrous, right? It's not a hindsight 2020 thing. Healthy Cam Newton has literally never been bad at football. Never.
Ever.
Like that. I don't know why we just assumed that he would be. It's not like a Ryan Fitzpatrick where you're like, ah, it depends. You never know what you're going to get. No, healthy Cam Newton has consistently been the same guy. Like his passing completion percentage and like his running, it's all healthy. It's all been relatively the same. Now, when he couldn't throw to his right or whatever it was, clearly that's why we knew something was wrong, right? Because healthy Cam had been so consistent. We weren't just like, ah, that's just Cam. Just he's in a funk. No. Healthy Cam Newton has always been a stud. So when he was a stud on Sunday night, it was like, what are you guys are idiots? If you were going to be anything other than that. Josh McDaniels is a good coordinator too. So you knew that they were going to, the Patriots are the most like adaptable team in the NFL. So you knew they were going to just tailor the offense to him. And as we've seen with a healthy Cam Newton, anytime the offense is tailored to him, it's usually good, you know, so regardless of the talent around him. I don't think he has talent around him in New England offensively. And he put up like 460 yards on the Seahawks, like with just Julian Edelman for the most part. His running backs did nothing. His other receivers were just okay. There's no surprise. There's like 10 GMs, I think, who should be fired Monday morning because they passed on Cam as a starter. Seriously.
Shout out to Ryan Pace.
The Bears guy. Yeah, the Bears, I would say – I included the Raiders in that prior to Monday night. it looks like they figured out a way to work the Carr thing out, which is fine. That's fine. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I would maybe scratch them. But the Chargers, he's better than Herbert and Tyrod, and I like Tyrod. But the ceiling on Cam is ridiculous. Ceiling on Cam is best player in the league.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
That type of player is very rarely available. And the last time a player like that was available, Peyton Manning in 2012, people were lining up at his door after we didn't know if his neck would fall off the next time he played football. Meanwhile, Cam has some injuries, and it's like, oh, maybe he's going to die. Maybe we shouldn't sign him. It was just really, really frustrating to watch Cam in free agency, and it was really enjoyable to watch him fall out on Sunday night. Like, he was just as good as Russ. I think I tweeted after the game, Russ was the more dominant player, which there is an argument for that as well. But, I mean, Cam was lights out. And, like, the interception he threw was bad. But I would say, aside from that, that was a near flawless performance, man. Cam was really good.
No, definitely. And I think it was also a really good read by Quinton Dunbar on that. I know it's a bad throw, but also a really good read by Quinton Dunbar. So I won't eviscerate him for that pick. But a guy who I thought was dominant in both the pass game and in the run game was DK Metcalf, man. And I know you're a huge fan of DK. I haven't seen Stephon Gilmore look like that against a wide receiver in years. Like, that's how good DK Metcalf was. I want to get your take on it, because I thought DK was, I think he's truly blossoming into this superstar receiver that, quite honestly, like, if you just had to watch the tape of Ole Miss, I know he had his injury concerns and whatnot, but it's the same thing. It's like, if you just watch this guy play football, you can tell that this dude's special. Like, who cares about free cones and shuttle times and whatever? This dude can catch the ball, and he's bigger and faster than everyone.
Yeah, I think I just did an interview with a kid who's in college right now. He was asking me about, like, the pre-draft process, and I thought it was very important to, like, the good evaluators, I think, depending on the position, focus more on what a guy can do and less on what he cannot. With DK, there was entirely too much focus on what he could not do, right? Because even, like, if you're – like, every prospect is bad at something, right? I mean, unless you're, like, DeAndre Hopkins or Julio, Odell, like, clearly they're bad at nothing. But with DK, it was like he had drops issues. That was a problem. Honestly, that was the most credible complaint. I think he dropped like 10% of his passes at Ole Miss, some like lead FBS receivers and drop percentage. Like, that is why you don't take a guy. That's actually legit. Like, teams who passed up on him and they were like, oh man, he couldn't hold on to the ball. I feel them, because that is legit. I don't care how big, strong, fast you are. You don't catch it, you don't matter, right? You won't, you know. But the idea that he didn't have like short area quickness, I was like, dude, he's got deep ball quickness. I'll take that. let's just focus on that part. And it looks like the Seahawks did that, and they realized they had the best deep ball throw in the league. I mean, 2 and 2 makes 4. Like, it was a very easy decision. And in terms of his matchup with Gilmore, I wrote about that the day after the game. DK's not really scared of anybody. And he doesn't think anyone can stop him from being great. And I'm sure a lot of receivers think that, but there is someone who can stop them. It's usually a Revis or a Sherm, or a Patrick Peterson, or a Stephon Gilmore type of guy who, like, no, I'll make sure you don't catch it ever. I don't know if that guy exists right now for DK. Last year it did. Patrick Peterson held him to 0 catches. That's legit incredible. That was rookie DK. I don't think there's a guy in the league now who can do that. And we're going to see some more guys shadowing him like that. But I also think, I think Gilmore played well. Too. He gave him some balls, but like on the other times, shout out to the homie Sam Gold, who used to work for us at The Athletic. He did a film study that just dropped on Thursday about Gilmore's play. Gilmore was solid. The problem was Russ and DK had to be perfect to beat him, and they were. Like, that's what it requires to beat the great guys. You have to be perfect. And they were, because Russ and DK are capable of doing that. The other part of it is that the Seahawks were smart and put DK in the slot. Like, on that touchdown, he runs it from the slot. I don't care if you're Darrell Revis, Patrick Peterson, Richard Sherman in his prime. There's no way in hell you're covering DK in the slot. You're just not. It's just there's too many options there. Well, you're not covering DK with a good quarterback like Russ. Maybe with like Josh Allen or something, maybe. But even Josh Allen's completed some balls on Stephon Gilmore. I guess the short version of this is, like, DK not scared of nobody. He shouldn't be. And we're going to see a lot more of that, I think, against some really good corners. Ramsey's in the division. Patrick Peterson's in the division. They played Tre'Davious White this year, who's probably the second best corner, maybe third in the league. So he's going to get some tests. And I think they're going to go in a similar fashion as what we saw on Sunday night.
Well, the biggest takeaway for me is, like, even with the one shutdown corner that the teams have, like the Gilmores, like the Tre'Davious Whites of the world, Patrick Peterson, like you mentioned, it opens up so much space for Tyler Lockett on that field. He seems like he's open all the time. And when you don't have your number one guy and a guy like Tyler Lockett, who I think is always criminally underrated by a lot of people who don't realize just how good Tyler Lockett is, I think that opens up the passing game as well. And we had a lot of talk, you know, Will Dissly was really good whenever he wasn't injured his first 2 years. And, you know, Greg Olsen got the 1 year, $7 million deal. But we haven't really seen much from that tight end group. And the fact that the Seahawks have been this good and letting Russ cook, you know, shout out to Seahawks Twitter. It's been really positive to see. And then once you can get the guys like Dissly involved, I don't know how you feel. I feel like that adds another dimension to the offense as well.
Yeah, I mean, you can never have too many good people to throw the ball to. I think, and yeah, when you're good at a thing, it opens up other things. I know that sounds really generic, but that's just kind of how sports work. I mean, it's how, like, even probably basketball works too, right? If you're a good 3-point shooting team, teams have to come close out on you, so now you're the paint's more open, right? Like, if, like, I'll use a team like an extreme one, like the Houston Rockets. They score a lot of points in the paint, even though they hook up a lot of threes. Why? Because they get chased off the line. They play small ball, so the paint's open, and, you know, rim protectors. Mm-hmm. And they have good guys who can go to the bucket. But the same thing is it happens in football, right? If you're a really dominant run team, right, and teams stack the box against you, you'll have opportunity to throw it over their heads. If teams drop back on you and drop 7-8 DBs, you can run it down their throat. I think, yeah, and if you got a really dominant number one receiver in DK, which I think DK became Seattle's number one receiver on Sunday. I think that was like the torch. I know Tyler probably wouldn't like me saying that. I got to give it up to DK. Because when you have that outside guy who can move everywhere and attract so much attention, yeah, it's going to open it up for – I mean, Freddie Swain was wide open on his touchdown.
Yeah,
some of that was some confusion on the Patriots' part because Tyler lined up at fullback, and that threw me off at the snap. I know that threw off J.C. Jackson. But when you have stuff like that, yeah, it opens up everything. Last year, the Minnesota game was a really good example. Russ had been killing it. So what did the Vikings do? They put two safeties back there the whole game. Who went off? The running backs, right? It pick your poison with a good offense. And I think that's going to be the case all year as well.
That's a really good point. Because like you said, if you decide to go two safeties deep every time, you got Chris Carson, who I thought looked really, really good against the Patriots. Carlos Hyde looked decent in his snaps as well, in his runs. It's a really exciting offensive group for the Seahawks. And I think, I don't know how you feel, because there's sometimes pushback about this, but I think this is the best offensive group as a whole Seattle's had in Russell Wilson's time.
I talked about that on our Seahawks Man to Man podcast too. I think the 2017 group was good as well. Like, looking at it now, it had Tyler Lockett, obviously, in year three, coming off of a broken leg, which was a little bit of an issue, but still had Lockett, had Jimmy Graham. I know Seahawks fans didn't like the utilization of Jimmy Graham. I understand that. He also caught 10 touchdowns that year. Paul Richardson had the year of his life. I think he caught 7 touchdowns, and it had Doug Baldwin. So you had it had Chris Carson too, but only for 4 games. But if you just look at a receiver group that had P. Rich, Jimmy, Doug, and Tyler, that's really good as well. The difference is, I guess, is just the running backs, arguably, because I think they didn't have anyone really, and they had Mike Davis, who was their best running back that year. They had J.D. McKissic. Honestly, they had talent. Like, J.D.'s what, the starter for the Washington football team right
now?
Yeah,
starter for the Washington
team. And I think Christian McCaffrey just got hurt, so he's out for the year, I believe, and Mike Davis is going to get the call over there in Carolina. So that unit was good. I agree that this one is better, because I think DK is the best receiver Russ has ever had. At least he has the most talent. I won't say the best right now, because Doug's put up some 1,000-yard seasons that were pretty impressive. But I think Doug also led the league in touchdown receptions once. But that 2015 mm-hmm. or 2017 unit, just like on paper, you look at it now, like that's there was some dudes. There's a reason Russ led the league in touchdown passes that year. He had guys.
Definitely. And like you said, the utilization of Jimmy Graham was the problem. It wasn't Jimmy Graham in itself. We all knew he couldn't block before he joined the Seahawks. Right. I don't know what they expect. I don't know what they expected when they he's one of those guys that's a wide right receiver at the tight end spot, just a really big wide out. So they put him at the tight end spot. So I agree with you that 2017 is probably the closest one, just because I love Doug Baldwin, and I think he's, again, another guy who's criminally underrated, you know, a guy who fought for everything. That, you know, you can't not love Doug Baldwin as a competitor. That's my belief anyway. Moving on to the Dallas game, what do you expect to see from Ross? What do you expect to see from the Cowboys? What type of game do you expect it to be? Because I think it's going to be a really exciting one again.
Yeah, the Seahawks-Cowboys games have been pretty good over the years. The Christmas Eve one, maybe that's Christmas Day in 2017, was good. That's the one Justin Coleman picked off Dak, jumped in the bucket, got the mm-hmm. fine. That's the Earl Thomas come-get-me game as well. I thought the 2018 game with Earl Thomas was good. He picked off Dak twice. And took a bow in front of the Cowboys sideline. That was a good game. I think Frank Clark was good that game too. Jay Reid had a couple sacks. The playoff game in 2018, I thought that was really interesting, low key as well. I'll give away who I think is an X factor in this game is Shaq Griffin. It's probably the worst game he's ever played. I think he gave up like 100 yards by himself, a touchdown, had a defensive pass interference. And that was all like in the first half, I think. He was not good in that game, and he had to sit on that all offseason. He came back and then made the Pro Bowl. So I think all of that is going to be at play. There's going to be something. Zeke went off in that playoff game. I think Dallas is going to have probably the second best offense in the NFC. These guys are really, really talented. I know everyone after the Atlanta game kind of referenced the Falcons receiving trio as the best one in the league. I don't know.
Dallas three.
Yeah, Dallas's three is damn good. I used to cover the University of Idaho, and they had a bowl game in 2016, mm-hmm. the Potato Bowl against Colorado State. And I didn't know much about Colorado State, but in my pregame research, I did learn who Michael Gallup was. And Michael Gallup had like a gazillion yards in that game. You want to talk about a shootout? I think the score was like 61 of 50, I think was the final score of that game in a frozen tundra at Boise State's home field. I say that to say I've known Michael Gallup can ball for a while. Mm-hmm. Seeing him ball out in the league is no surprise. He's on like all three of my fantasy teams. Michael Gallup can ball. So I think between that trio, I think the Rams will have a really good trio by the end of the year. I think we'll be talking about their rookie. His name slips me right now from Florida. They have a really good trio as well. So we'll see what happens. I'm expecting a shootout. I don't trust either defense to stop anything. I really trust these two offensive coordinators and their quarterbacks. I mean, if you go – I don't know how many teams have a better situation in the NFC at quarterback, OC, and weapons. Like, it's pretty unfair, like, what these two specific teams have to work with. The same could be said mm-hmm. in Baltimore, though I would argue Russ's weapons are better than Lamar's. And then, obviously, Kansas City is a cheat code. But, like, in terms of OC, quarterback, and weapons, Dallas and Seattle are scary.
I agree, and to be fair, just because of the offenses, they were my picks for the NFC Championship game before the season started. Obviously, the defenses need to improve for both teams, in my opinion, for them to get there. But like you said, Michael Gallup is a number one receiver that goes underrated criminally, like I always say. CeeDee Lamb looks really, really good. I mean, if you watch CeeDee Lamb in college, that wouldn't be a surprise to you. And Amari Cooper has taken not just one step since he got traded from Oakland. He's taken about three, and he's really developed into that guy that Oakland thought they would draft him when they picked him that high. So credit, like you said, Dallas are really, really good. Seattle are really good. And I'm sure you're going to pick Seattle to win, but I still want your prediction for it. And what do you think will happen?
I'm thinking I'm thinking 34-29 Seattle. I think that's – well, I think it's a five-point spread right now, so I got right at the line. Mm-hmm. Vegas is good, so I'm going to trust Vegas. although they whiffed on the week one line, though. But they couldn't have known Seattle was going to come out and huck it like that. I bet you it would have been a bigger line. I think it was like Seattle by 1.5. And with a run-first offense, perhaps. But pass-first offense, mm-hmm. That's Falcons' defense is atrocious. See, I'll take 34-29 Seattle. Don't gamble ever. and I need to see what the over-under is, but I believe that would be the over as well. I'm a big Vegas guy, but I don't gamble. I want to make that very clear. Save your money, people. Don't waste it betting on football.
I know what you mean. It's not worth it, is it? The risk does not outweigh the reward.
It just depends on what your lifestyle is. Like the average person, no. But like you see, like Floyd Mayweather throw like 10 G's on a game. It's like, yes, Floyd can do that. We are not Floyd. Find the over-under. Over-under is 56. What's 34 plus 29?
63.
All right. Take the over.
Like you said, I wish we were Floyd, though. I wish we had that type.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great. I would be just as irresponsible. No, I would not say he's irresponsible with his money. I would be just as flamboyant and, like, arrogant, I would say, with my money as Floyd would. As if I had that type of cash. I think Floyd owns like 100 diamond watches or something like that. Like Floyd just does all these ridiculous things. And I think it's disingenuous for anyone to say that they would not behave very similarly if they had Mayweather's money. Like, sure, you'd buy some different things, but you'd go wild out for sure.
I already have like 100 pairs of sneakers. I'd have like 500 more.
Yeah, I'd have an entire house dedicated to sneakers. My sneakers would be just kept. Their own property.
That'd probably be the same. But I do want to round it off by asking you about Jamal Adams. I just wanted to get your takeaway because obviously that was a big offseason move for the Seahawks, trading two firsts. What do you make of Jamal's start in Seattle? Do you see him getting better? Because obviously I don't think we've not seen anything close to the best of Jamal Adams yet.
Yeah, we maybe not have seen the best. I mean, we've seen damn close. Like, he's leading the team in sacks. Mm-hmm. He's getting in the backfield, making TFLs. Like, he's a really good tackler. He's probably the best one. Him and Bobby on the same team, you're not getting away from them in terms of tackling. So I think he's been really good in that regard. I think the energy he just has is infectious. I think people are starting to see what we're seeing in training camp because it's hard to really write about it. You got to just see it. You got to just see him being so fired up, like – I think I tweeted it during the first game. He's just having more fun than everyone else. That's what it looks like. I just can't confirm that. Some guys are just really like reserved. Like I've never known if Chris Carson's having fun. He doesn't say anything. But I'm sure he's having a blast. I think he leads. I think he's second in the league in receiving touchdowns through two games. But I say that to say Jamal is just a big ball of energy, man. He's really, really passionate dude. He's funny. He's honest. Really like him. I like covering Jamal. The Jets shouldn't have let him go. Their defense is bad. Bad. I felt bad for Bradley McDougal just watching that game on Sunday. I was like, Bradley doesn't deserve this. Like, he deserves better. No. He's a good dude, man. I like Bradley. To see him over there in that bad defense, man, it sucks. But, yeah, Jamal's really good. He's going to be really good.
Touching on the Jets, like realistically, that's just a whole franchise of bad decisions, though.
Yeah,
having Adam Gase as your head coach is probably number one.
Yeah, the Jets are bad. The Jets, Detroit, and Jacksonville are just some atrocious franchises in terms of just competence. Washington as well. Their problems go like deeper than just bad football decisions. That's just like a culture of grossness. That's there. That's not unique to them. I'm sure other teams are gross too, but theirs keeps getting like exposed a lot more often.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of on field, Jacksonville, New York, both New York teams, to be honest, Detroit, Cleveland, those fan bases, I feel so bad for them. Especially Jacksonville, because you have a quarterback. They found a franchise quarterback in the
a really, round. Really good quarterback.
Yeah, that's when you should start like paying all of your other guys. Like they worked backwards. They found their franchise guy for pennies and then started giving away their players. Like, you guys are working backwards. You're supposed to keep a Jalen Ramsey when you have a franchise guy. Dump Fournette because he didn't think he had a quarterback. That was stupid. But it really was. Like, I don't know. We're going on a tangent here. But I'm a Wazoo grad. And when I heard Leonard Fournette say, oh, it's my first time I had a quarterback, I was like, okay, so what did you think Gardner was last year when he was, like, tearing it up? Boy. Yeah, like, you out of your mind. Anyway, so have fun with 43-year-old Tom Brady. Ridiculous, man.
No, and to be honest with you, I've really enjoyed this part, the tangent part. I love talking NFL wide. I mean, obviously, I love talking Seahawks because that's the team I support, and, you know, it's a team I talk about. But the NFL's full of great storylines, and it's fun. And like you said, like, it's crazy to me how they have a franchise quarterback on less than 900,000, and they're not exploiting that. Like, it's crazy. They're tanking. Yeah, they're trying to get a quarterback when the likelihood is he probably won't be better than Gardner Minshew is.
I mean, maybe he is. Maybe Trevor Lawrence is better. I don't know. I do know that Gardner's good now, right? Like, he's good now and he's cheap now. You should keep him and build around that.
Well, it's not even that. It's Gardner's good, and I think he's good enough that he'll keep you away from Trevor Lawrence. I think that he's that good.
Yeah, what they're going to have to end up doing is, and this is, you don't have to be the worst team to get the first pick. You can always trade for it. I mean, you can go up and get your guy. Washington did to go get RG3. You can do that. And they have a bunch of assets to do it. But, yeah, it sucks. Yeah, they're going to end up going like 7-9. That's going to get you like the 9th pick. You know, like, you're going to have to give up some of those assets you got for Jalen Ramsey or Ngakoue, and then you're going to be – you'll have two – you have a quarterback controversy. It's really – it's dumb. Jacksonville's dumb.
Thank goodness for Russell Wilson, eh?
Yeah, Jesus. They did it the right way. They found the QB and was like, let's go. Let's get him some help. Let's get him some pass rushers. Let's get him some receivers. Let's get him some tight ends. They went and got – they traded for Jimmy Graham and Percy Harvin, you know, like – say what you want about the deals themselves, they were being aggressive to try to build around their QB. Mm-hmm. And that's like that. I can commend that, the thinking, maybe if I didn't like the process in those deals.
I agree. And just to round this off, Mike, I really want to thank you for coming on. I feel like I've really enjoyed this. It's been a chat. We've been a bit everywhere, and I love when chats become like that. It's really enjoyable. Just tell the people where they can find you, where they can find your work, because you're honestly one of my favorite followers on Twitter, and your articles are always, in my opinion, top notch.
Thank you, man. Follow me on Twitter at Mike Dugard, MikeDugar. Find all my work at The Athletic. Let's see what else. I host a Seahawks Man to Man podcast. It's always pinned to the top of my Twitter. You don't even got to search for it. Just boom. It's right there. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. We're on The Athletic as well. We got a podcast section on the app. It's everywhere, man. So appreciate you having me.
No problem. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Be sure to leave this podcast a 5-star review. Be sure to leave Mike's podcast a 5-star review, because him and Christopher Kidd do some great work, and he always gets some great guests on there. Take care, everyone. Thank you for listening. Stay safe.